Wait, I keep wanting to say not live. Live and coming to you from the fabulous Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California. It's the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Before we have our special guests today are Barbie Kligman and Billy Malone. I want to welcome back Dennis Olson and, of course, producer Sammy Junio. Hi to Zach Herndon in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi, Zach.
Hi, Zach.
Zach handles a lot of, well, you know what he does. He handles my website and all that shit because I'm too stupid to figure it out. And Kathy St. George, we love you, but she will not be joining. I hope you're watching, Kathy. She will not be joining us today. She just has some personal things to tend to. I want to start off my show as usual by saying that I do not endorse Wells Fargo Home Mortgage whatsoever because they're crooks. Nor do I endorse Tower Urology because their billing department is screwed up. That being said, I know it's true too. let's see what else is going on. It's a hot in Los Angeles already. Loving that. I will be appearing. I don't have the tentative date yet. It's either going to be the 24th or the 26th at the Ha Ha Cafe with the LA School of Comedy, Hi Sunda Group. Went Friday night to see, gosh, I can't remember the damn theater troupe, but Sunda's daughter, Tova Zaffron. And Aviva Zaffron was the star of the musical Hairspray.
Wow.
And there was all these kids from the Performing Arts High School. Brilliant. It was absolutely marvelous.
It was amazing.
And I'm embarrassed, Tova and Aviva, that I can't remember the name of your troupe. I should have jotted it down. But it was an amazing show, and we're very proud of you. And damn, you guys both sing like belting it out, babes. I'm so proud of you. Considering you remember Cinda's kids.
Yeah, they were so little when I
They were so little. And the first time I met them, they came to the bar, and one of them tried to give me some attitude or something like that. And I was like, don't start. And we've been friends ever since. But I told Cinda, I said, this is the longest I've ever seen both of them without a cell phone in their hand. Because they were on stage, and it was beautiful, beautiful production. And let's see what else is going on. Hi, Robin Raven. Thank you for choosing from Mobile, Alabama. And Nikki Kemp and Dennis and I and Robin went up to Neptune State yesterday. We cruised around Malibu in the convertible. Had a great time. Love you. And Robin is an author of Santa's Vegan Christmas, and she's a travel writer. And we will be talking to her in a future episode. All right. So we went to see Dennis and a bunch of friends, new friends of mine, old friends of his, went to see Polyester. Mm. Remember the John Waters film from 1979 with Francine Fishbein? And remember, that was the first movie that was in Smell-O-Vision, where you scratched and sniffed.
Odorama,
excuse me. I stand corrected. But yeah, like the flash up, like she would, you know, I would say flatulate, and you scratch it, and it smells like a fart. And then you go in different sense. And in the 1979 film, when you went to the theater, they really smelled bad. And I was like all prepared to be like grossed out. But they're all so generic now because everybody's so afraid of being offended. Okay. Barbie Kligman, Billy Malone. My dear friends, we've been friends for, I met Billy when I first started working at Wolfgang's some 9 years ago. And through Billy, I've met his lovely wife, Babs Barbie. And I was thinking about this today. I'm going to tell it. I don't care what y'all think. I remember Billy saying, I really like this girl. And then, you know, I remember that you were with a girlfriend and you were sitting at table 30 and you were wearing a blue dress and you looked adorable. And Billy's standing there and he's like, you know, he's talking and you had your hands in your lap and you were smiling like this. And Billy was doing his all shucks, kind of kicking his feet back and forth. Because it was adorable. And I knew from that moment, I was like, aw, and now they're married. How long you guys been married?
35 years.
Three, right?
Four.
Seems like 35. You guys are an awesome couple. We have a little gift for you. I'm not much for wrapping, but we picked this up as a little free housewarming gift for your new home that you just moved into and purchased.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that? I hope you like it. So every time
now,
you look.
Now, does Billy eat from that?
No, you can do whatever you want with it. It's designed to feed birds.
Well, we got a lot of hummingbirds in the backyard.
Yeah, well, I hope that you will,
that's,
you know,
beautiful.
While you're sipping
thank
your coffee,
you,
you know, that you'll enjoy it. It's a little bird feeder.
Actually,
for
you. Actually, I can put the cigar at the end of it, right?
You can do whatever you want, baby.
You can turn it into a lantern.
Billy said, Billy texted me, he said, can I smoke, because Billy likes his cigars, and he said, can I smoke cigars in the studio? I was like, nope. But we got here, and there's a cigar on the sidewalk outside. I said, they're here.
Wherever we go.
Tell us about, you want to talk about your new house a little bit? I would like to. I mean, so you just bought your first home together.
That's right.
Is this your first private residence freestanding home that you've ever owned? Wow, that's huge. Congratulations, you guys, especially in this town.
A lot of work.
So you were telling, what street are you? Well, you didn't have to tell me the street.
Nah, it's okay. I'm just showing up.
Oh, I'll find it, believe me. But we don't want our vast, vast listening audience. We are hovering around 12,000 downloads on iTunes alone, you guys. Thank you very, very much. And iHeartRadio, we haven't even counted that yet because I don't know how. But we're very, very proud of that. And thank you guys for being here. So since your first home together, you and I'm fascinated by, seriously, my science fiction fantasy would be if walls could talk. So you said 1924. Is there a freestanding garage or is there an attached garage?
Well, what's interesting about it is there's a freestanding garage that, however many years ago, I assume it was the previous owners, they converted it into a cabana.
So it's like a little tiny guest house kind of thing, or is it an
open
cabana?
Open cabana, but with a roof.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's on the back of the property. And it's absolutely beautiful, although we did realize it's kind of too big.
The cabana.
Yeah.
Because we would discuss this all the time when you're looking at houses that I'll never be able to afford, maybe someday. But so many of these houses that were built in Los Angeles in the 20s had the Model T-sized garages. That's why they're all so small and they're freestanding. But because if you look, because I always wonder myself, how could anything from like the 30s up, that cars were huge, but all these homes that were built at that time, that was when the Model T was, you know, taken over and they were everywhere and that's what they were designed to fit. And you're putting in a
pool.
Thank you. That's so exciting. We were fortunate we had a pool at our home growing up. I've never lived in a house without a pool, except for now. My tired-ass dingy apartment.
Well, you can come to our house.
Yep.
All right.
Okay. Surely, you know, you guys work a lot, so I'm just going to climb the fence. How many feet deep are we going?
Not deep. Probably about five.
Well, five. That's perfect. Yeah. That's perfect. You can
deep enough to drown someone.
Hello. Or a bowl of soup too. Well, that's awesome. And have they started construction? Have they started digging?
No, not yet. We're just working on the inside of the house, get that squared away, and then we'll start on the outside with the permits and all that other stuff.
Well,
so
I'm just so happy for both of you, and I'm sure it's a charming, charming place.
Yeah, it's fun. We'll have a lot of good times there.
I'm sure. And that's a fireplace. Oh, that's right. You were telling me that they were coming to reopen it or fix it.
Basically, it's one of those old school. You can actually burn wood.
Mm-hmm.
But the flue has a defect, so they have to fix that. And the box is a little small. So we're sort of trying to decide, do we just fix the flue or do we do whatever we want to do with the fireplace
make it bigger, open it up. Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you have it, you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Listen, you will. Have you ever had a fireplace before?
Never had a house, never had a fireplace, never had a pool.
Girl, let me tell you what, you are in for the, I know you guys love being home together, but you're just going to love it.
Funny thing is, we already do, and we don't have half the furniture and the fireplace that works and the pool and any of that yet, but it's home.
You're going to be laying by the... I know you will be out there in your bathrobe with your cigar in front of your computer writing your screenplays. No, I mean, it's friggin' awesome. I can't believe I didn't get over when you guys were in the high-rise because I would just love to see him out there.
I feel like John Barrymore.
Oh, that reminds me. Chicken Barrymore. Don't let me forget to ask you about Santa Clarita Diet, but not just yet.
Okay.
Okay, now we're going to get into more of that because these two are very, very, I'm very, very proud to be their friends and new friends to my friends here. But they are very, very involved in our television and movie community here in Los Angeles. And it's friggin' awesome. And I said today, I was sitting there at the computer going over IMDb and Dennis was in the 5 feet away in the kitchen and I'm 5 feet away in the living room. And I go, I hate him. And he goes, why? And I go, because he's so accomplished. And Dennis goes, well, don't hate him for that. And I go, I hate him because he works so hard.
It's a grind, man.
Listen, you know, of all the people that I've met in front of, behind the camera in this town, which is a lot, you are so dedicated and hardworking, and I know you are too. And one of the neatest things I ever saw was when you guys were in Beverly Hills on, what was that street you were on?
Reeves.
And I came over there, we were reading lines or something, but in the living room, you had that big dry erase board set up. And I think it was Secrets and Lies you were working on. Whatever show it was, but it was just this analytical story about, you know, and you were writing it. And I'm like, what's this idea? Well, this is what we're writing. And I'm looking at, like, you know, person A, and it's so involved and so intriguing and exciting about how you write and figure out the plots and the twists and all that sort of thing.
It's both torturous and fun.
Now, how long have you are a very acclaimed producer and writer, and your credits, I could just go on, but I mean, I don't even know where to start. CSI New York. Do you know Rocky Carroll?
I never met Rocky Carroll.
You know what? He's been on The Bob Dean Show. Yay. And he is going to come back on again to The Bob Dean Show. Yay. And he's
NCIS.
NCIS. Right? But I just don't know, through the community, you had met him, because he's directing. He's just great. I met him at Wolfgang's with his lovely wife and daughter. And he came on, last year. But he's terrific. And so maybe someday we can just do a show without, and just go right into the writing and directing and acting, sure, kind of thing. I'd love for you guys to meet him. He's terrific.
Yeah.
Magnum PI, Code Black, Designated Survivor. Now, is that still in production?
It is. It was canceled for ABC and then snatched up by Netflix.
Thank you. That's where I was losing it. Because the thing about it is that now that I'm taking a little time off from my illustrious bartending career, as I was telling everybody, as soon as I have to tap into that $67 in my savings account, I'll get back to work. But so many of these programs that you guys do and other shows, for the first time, because any show that I've ever enjoyed, I've always followed it in syndication, because I've worked nights, and I've worked nights my entire adult life.
Right.
Point of all this being is that last night I was at the computer and I was doing this, and Designated Survivor is one. Well, Secrets and Lies I fell in love with immediately, but I couldn't follow, and then I got sidetracked because of work. But Designated Survivor, I'd seen the trailers for it, and it was so exciting to begin with. So I watched a little last night, but that's a really cool show.
It was fun. It was a very big production. And I mean, here's the thing. I've equally worked, I'd say, on new shows and on shows where I start in the fourth season,
mm-hmm,
pretty consistently. I don't know why that is, except for Code Black. That was season three.
Mm-hmm.
And new shows are much, much, much harder, at least for the first 6 months of a new show, because invariably you're trying to figure out what it is. And usually, because a pilot will take a big swing at something, it doesn't lend itself naturally to what episode two might be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fair amount of time spent trying to figure that out and trying to be on the same page with the other writers, with the producers, with the studio, with the network. And in a perfect world, you find a rhythm somewhere around episode eight. I mean, if you can do it before, great. Mm-hmm. I imagine something like Law and Order found its rhythm much sooner because the formula was the same.
And they're going into the 21st season. That's
SVU.
Incredible. SVU. Yeah, incredible, huh?
It is. They broke the record of, is it Gunsmoke?
Probably, yeah.
I think it's Gunsmoke.
Longest running drama. Yeah. Yeah, it was Gunsmoke.
Mm-hmm.
Marissa Hargitay's stepmother.
Hargitay.
Well, her stepmother.
Oh,
who,
right,
married Mickey Hargitay.
Hargitay. Yes.
Would come into Wolfgang's like once every few months, and she was a delight, and she keeps inviting me. She's like, after she has two martinis, she's like, you need to come out of the house sometime and hang out. I'm like, sure. That's neither here nor there.
Mariska was one of the loveliest people.
I assume she would be. I just am in love with her, and I'm so binge. The term binge, I hate to get on things like, you know, the terms binge watching and that sort of thing. But I am on Law & Order because it's on like 15 different channels. You know,
I tend to watch. It's funny. Anything that I work on and then subsequently leave, I don't usually watch afterward, mm-hmm, because you know how the sausage is made, and
yeah,
you can't watch it like just a viewer, just, you know. Well, so, but SVU was my first.
That's what I was saying, is that I saw your credit on there and I called you up because I was like, Barbie Klickman, yay! And that was a great episode. What was it? The teenage girl who.
Well, I had
the one that
four equally vile in my family. My family was horrified. The first one was the adopted teenage girl that molested.
That's the one I saw.
Sister,
yeah.
It's called Damaged.
That's the one I saw. Well, what is your big project you're working on now? What show are you working on now?
Right now, at this moment, I'm working on Magnum. Lovely people, really fun. Before you ask, no, I haven't gone to Hawaii. So
I was going to say, I thought it shot in Hawaii, but
it does.
All the nuts and bolts come from L.A., right?
The most of what happens here. The writing.
The right. That's what I meant. The writing. The yeah.
Yeah. So the first, I'd say, 5 months since last May, I was on FBI, and then I joined in October Magnum, and I wrote a couple episodes, and I'm going back in a month and a half or so.
Where'd you go to college?
SUNY Binghamton.
SUNY Binghamton.
That's State New York.
Oh, I was going to say that's in New York, right? Mm-hmm. Now, is this what you always wanted to do? Was write, whether it be television or.
I always.
Or did you start with a different major? Kind, you know.
Oh, I definitely started with a different. I always enjoyed writing. I never saw it as something you did for real. Mm-hmm. You know, you went to you were a CPA, you were a lawyer, you were something with a clear path. You know. But my sister moved out here about 30 some odd years ago, and she became an agent, and I used to come out and visit her and started to realize that people really did this. And I went through, I don't know, four other potential careers. First, in college, I majored in math and history.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're an egghead too. with all due respect, that you know.
Not so good at it now. Tipping, I'm okay with, but everything else is.
Yes, you are.
Measurements, yeah, spatially. He always says that. I'm not supposed to load the dishwasher. He's like, didn't you ever have that toy as a kid with the blocks that you put in the right? And apparently not. Anyway, I couldn't figure out what to do. So my sister had said to me, well, you know, you like numbers and you like people, which turned out she was wrong about. But at the time, I thought, yeah, I do.
The numbers,
I was going to say.
So I was going to go into hotels. So I was, I know, right? So I got accepted with a deferral from the Cornell School of Hotel Management. And I was in complete awe by the wine cellar and the kitchen, two things that have absolutely nothing to do with me. I don't drink and I don't cook, but I just thought it was cool. And they said I needed to get some service experience before I could start there. So I went to work at the Holiday Inn Crown Plaza on 49th and Broadway in New York City.
As in what department?
Guest service representative, which means front desk.
Front desk.
Polyester blend, itchy.
Ding, welcome.
Tight, uncomfortable. And, you know, what they don't tell you before you start is that they overbook the rooms, much like flights. They overbook.
Intentionally.
Yes, because people will cancel, people won't show.
They count on that, yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, in the middle of the theater district on a Friday night at 4, you're not usually lucky that they don't show. In fact, they all show, and they're standing there with their suit ready to go to the theater. And you're trying to sell them on the Murphy bedroom that is sort of the parlor room attached to the suite that's not really a room, you know? So that didn't work out so well.
That's a lot of pressure, too, I bet. It's kind of like same thing, not the same thing, but like being behind the bar when you're in the weeds. I couldn't imagine. It's a whole different situation being behind the bar because you can say, shut the hell up or whatever. Well, you're not supposed to. But when you have to be there and people have traveled for thousands of miles and you said they're ready to go and they just want to go up and rest and you're trying to tell them that they can't, that there's no room at the inn, yikes.
I quickly learned that the service industry was not for me.
Not for you.
Yeah. I guess you could have told me had you known me back then. So then I was going to go to medical school, and then anyway, I ended up in commodities, and then...
Holy cow. You're so young. I didn't know you had such a background before.
I know. It's weird because I'm 25. And
I know. I was gonna say 26, 26 and a half. With that skin, oy.
Oy. Anyway, long story short, at one point, I had no job and no apartment, and my mother said to me, you know, you said you wanted to move to L.A. at one point. Perhaps this is the time. And I came out here, and I started as an assistant in 96. And I was fortunate enough to be an assistant on ER. So, and from there, I probably spent about 5 or 6 years being an assistant, a researcher, whatever, and ultimately got my first real shot on SVU.
See, that's what I was going to ask. How did you get your foot in the door? And you've paid your dues big time.
I did pay my dues, but, you know, the unfortunate thing is there's usually only one of a couple ways that you end up on a writing staff, you know? If you're someone who's produced plays or you're a playwright, and then they can maybe get you in that way. If you have the fortune of having a great sample that someone can read and go, I want to meet this person. But more often than not, that first staff writing job, bottom of the comes from you hitching your wagon to someone who you're assisting, someone you're researching for, a company you're working at, and praying. And I hitched my wagon a couple times, but it took a while to pay off. And when I started as an assistant and researcher at SVU, then I got a freelance, and then I was staff for a while. And after that first job, you have a much better shot at
You know what that brings up? That something just popped in my head that's very interesting. As a researcher for, like I've noticed too, in a lot of the episodes that I'm catching up on, they highlight things that were big news at the time for like a JonBenet Ramsey kind of story. Right. You know, as a researcher, does that mean you're researching, you know, like facts to put into how they write the story? I mean, like, you know, like the ballistics. Do you study the ballistics in of something, a situation in real life, so they can make sure that it's written properly on the show? Or researching, what does that exactly mean?
Well, different shows, it's different things, mm-hmm. right? So, so if you work on a cop show, researching can be sitting and talking to real cops for a few days and gathering stories and anecdotes.
Right.
When it comes time for that, you know, final pass of something that you're gonna hand in, we have a couple of close cop friends that I will usually, or a couple of writers who might as well be cops for the sheer number of years they've been writing mm-hmm. procedural stuff, and I'll run it by them. Is this kosher? A lot of times, though, you'll see a story that sparks you, or you'll see a combination of things and then go, what if this happens? Which he's actually much better at than I am. I've become fairly good at the execution, but I don't have a lot of eureka moments. My favorite story about this was that researching now, you know, you tap Google and you can find
anything.
I mean, there's a few things where I guess I'd have to go undercover, which that would be like the service industry for mm-hmm. me. I don't think it would work well. But Google anything, right? But when I really started as a researcher, it was, I want to say it was 98, 99.
Mm-hmm.
So no Google.
Mm-hmm. Still using Encyclopedia Britannica.
But a library.
By the way, AOL was just starting.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on a show that John Wells produced called Trinity. Now, Trinity was about an Irish Catholic family. And the dad was he worked for the bus company, but he also owned a bar. The mom wanted to go back to college at 50. One son was a cop. His wife was a neonatal ICU nurse. A daughter was a bond trader. Another son was a Jesuit priest. Another son worked for the unions. And another daughter was pregnant with twins and a drug addict. So I had to research.
I was going to say
all of it. And I couldn't, there was no, it was, who do we know? I was learning from someone who was great, but we would have to find random. I was on the phone for an hour with a Jesuit priest and then with a bond trader and then with an ER doc from ER who I had worked with already. And then, you know, and I mean, the best thing you can do is find out everything there is to find out about something and give it to the writer and let them cull what
sculpt
they
it or what. Yeah.
Right. At that time, there were several writers who did it that way. And then there were other writers who you would tell them what came out of the phone call and then they'd go, yeah, but I want it this way. So then you'd go back and call again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I spent more time in that office researching this and, you know, so.
Like Jimmy Olsen, sort of?
A little bit. Yeah. But I mean, it was amazing because, and it sounds like, you know, I walked 4 miles to school
in the snow.
But it is, because now when you have the luxury of, I need to find out about something and I can just type something. I mean, mm-hmm. I think about that all the time because my mother died in 96 and she died really before cell phones became a thing, before the internet became a thing, before any, and it's, I think about all the technological advances she's missed and, you know, for everything that's wrong with them, it's helped us in certain mm-hmm. ways, so.
Well, that's great. And it's also very neat that, because I know you said your sister out here already, but that your folks were encouraging for you to move. A lot of times, you know, parents don't want their kids to move so far away, especially. But that's what was your mother's name?
My dad collected airline mileage, so. My mother's name was Norma.
Norma. Well,
Truth is, had my sister not, my sister was very much the pioneer. Because when she went, it was like, you're doing what? By the time you get to the fourth child, like, I've heard several people say,
are you the youngest?
You know, I'm the youngest.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Get out. They were like, go. Dude.
It's like, oh, your food fell in the mud. You'll be fine. Yeah.
Well, let's talk to your husband over here a little bit. Yeah. Do me a favor, Mr. Malone. Turn around and look at that camera. Okay, the reason why I'm making Billy do this, y'all, is because if you haven't already, and I say this with all due respect and admiration, if you haven't noticed his mug on TV, you will. Because how many times I'll be watching TV and I'll be laying around in my pajamas going, there he is again. And it's great. It's great. And it's funny, too, because Miss Rebecca Field, mm-hmm. who you did Grey's Anatomy with, right?
Mm-hmm.
She has been a guest on The Bob Dean Show. Yay. With Raffi. And she was great. And we tried to call you. We thought it would just be a kick.
Oh, wow.
To call from the studio here, but you were probably on set doing something.
It was from you when I hung up.
Yeah, right. Hello. Don't answer it. It's Bob Dean. Oy. So, my buddy, we met at Wolfgang's Steakhouse by Wolfgang's Wiener, the now defunct, where they're moving, about 9 years ago. And I don't know, I felt like we became fast friends, and you're a terrific fellow. And I want to tell you this before I forget, too. And I mean this in a happy way, kind of sort of now, but, you know, cancer has touched us all, every one of us, whether it be a family member or a friend, and I know it's touched you. And my sister was dealing with her, and we, you know, we lost her some years ago, but you really helped me through that a lot, because I had that breakdown on camp. I was in an audition at USC and just had a breakdown because I was speaking to my other sister, and you held me together on that, and I love you for it. The reason I bring this up is because Jennifer Diamond, the fabulous psychic and author, has been on twice, and the last, and she lives in South Florida now, but she used to live here, and the last time she was on the show, well, I did say that the first time she was on, she said that my mom was in here with us, and my first thought was, I'll never be able to jerk off again. That was my first thought. Pardon me, Mom.
Of course it was.
But then the last time, my mom and my sister were here, and they're doing good.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought about that, but thank you for all that. But yeah, so they're probably here right now. Hey, Mom. Stella and Norma. Wow. My mom was Stella. Your mom's Norma. You know, they're, and you're, everybody's kicking around up there. Your mom, they're all kicking around right now.
And his.
That's what I said. And yours and his, and everybody's kicking around right now going, look at those fools. Or, no, but you know what they're doing? They're going, we're so proud of all them. Sure. So what project are you working on right now?
Project I'm working on now. I just finished a 3-episode arc on L.A.'s Finest.
L.A.'s Finest, yeah.
So that's the most recent acting project, and I got about...
And what is your character on L.A.'s Finest?
What is my character?
I wrote
it's
it down.
It's got to be Frank.
It's called Frank.
Frank, that's it. Right here, Frank. With Jessica Alba and Gabrielle Union, right?
Yeah. So
I hear she's very nice.
You know what? I didn't get to work with them. No. I didn't meet them, but I heard it's a great group of people. Also, you know, one of the best experiences I've had as far as working on television.
I'm glad. I cut you off. Was there something more detailed you were going to say that?
No.
I remember when you you did that. What's it's not on, but what's her name from? But she's gorgeous. She this not the Lea Remini. And yes. You spoke to her. What show was that?
The X's.
Yeah. And but you had that scene where you worked with another detective. Well, but I remember you. I was laughing when you were telling me that you walked right up to her and said, "I'm from Brooklyn," and you guys had a nice chat about Brooklyn.
She's wonderful. Yeah, she's really nice.
Have you been watching that Scientology program at all? Her thing.
I've seen her interview about it. I haven't actually seen that whole documentary, but mm-hmm. I've seen her interview about it.
I saw a couple episodes. It seems pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I should follow up more on it. But she looks pretty cool.
Yeah, she's, like I said, wonderful. She's really nice.
I remember you called me, I guess it's when you, the first time you did Hawaii 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
and you called me, and I answered. And you were so nervous and excited. You were sitting in a hotel room, and you were getting ready to shoot early the next morning. And you were like, you were just it's so excited, but you're like, I can't believe I'm here. This is so cool. This is so exciting.
You know, I'll tell you, the what's interesting about even doing all these shows, but the story of coming out here at a particular time and trying to get into this business. And then I remember the first job, the first thing I got, it was on a show called Super Ninjas with kids. And I pulled on, and I got on the lot at Paramount, and I did the show that day. And I went back to the parking lot, and I didn't want to leave the parking lot. I just sat on my motorcycle and had a cigarette because I said, geez, I wonder if I'm ever going to come back here again. But it was such a surreal moment of just sitting there being on the lot, you know, and it was such a long road to get here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that stuff is a lot of things that people need to hear those stories. Because especially in this business, keeping your enthusiasm up, keeping mm-hmm. your confidence, keeping the belief in yourself, because you are in a business that you constantly get kicked down. You're in a business that's so difficult, so competitive, one of the toughest businesses in the world to break into. And you have to have that drive. You have to have that passion, because that is what makes you survive that journey. You know,
well,
so... And for me, it wasn't when I had come out here, not to get too personal, but I had lost everything, and I had been out here, came out here with nothing. And
see, I know that you shared that with me, and that's why I'm so extra proud of you too. But you're bringing it up, so thank you.
No, I'm gonna bring it up because
well,
I think
it's something
it's
that
so
people
much,
need to hear.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
absolutely. You know, and when you're got about $600 in my pocket, no place to stay, no job, didn't know anybody. Almost 40 years old, and you're sitting there going, what the hell am I doing here? And you're working with kids that are half your age.
Yeah.
And you're trying to compete, and your mind will find any excuse in the world to tell you to give up. You will say, I'm too old, I'm not too this, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too short, I'm too tall. Anything in the world to give up. And I remember finally, after being out here for 2 years, no car, taking buses everywhere, walking around. I remember the first time I had my own room to rent. Before that, I was in a halfway house in Reseda. Six guys in one room, the only place it would take me.
No kidding.
Yeah, no credit, no job. We were going to rent an apartment.
You came here from
Vegas.
Vegas. You were in Vegas before.
For a little while.
Okay.
But I remember getting that first place and closing the door. And finally having a place to put my head down with my own bathroom. And then I remember finally getting a job at Wolfgang's. I remember having $50 in my pocket, a $50 bill folded up saying, when it gets down to this, I have bus fare back to Vegas. I remember them saying, how many days do you want to work? And I said, every day. And I remember it took me almost 2 years just to get on my feet before I could take an acting class. And then the first day of being on stage, and them asking me, how do you feel? And I says, I'm just glad to be here. He goes, no, really, how you feel? I says, no, you don't understand. I'm just glad to be here. And again, you know, you struggle with being seen, with agents and everything. And like I said, you're dealing with a lot of young kids that have never paid a cell phone bill, kids that have never paid all different, getting into Mercedes, driving home, and you're standing on a bus stop at 12 o'clock at night.
So what... So many questions. Where was your first apartment? What street? Hollywood? In Hollywood? Or
Koreatown.
Koreatown. What street were you on there?
Well, I was on Western.
Western.
Western and West 5th.
And what year did you come to L.A.?
Approximately.
2008.
Eight, yeah.
2008?
Yeah.
Damn, I had already been here 4 years. So when we first met at Wolfgang's, because you had been at Wolfgang's for... I started in May... Because I hate to keep reverting back to that stupid flood in Nashville, but that's why I'm still here working on it, too. But I started there. That was on May 2nd. So you had been at Wolfgang's from how long had they been open before?
Pretty much right when they opened.
Is when you started?
Yeah.
Okay, so I started, I think, 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, you were just digging in.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time we met, I went back in there, and I was the new trainee, but everybody was so freaking cool. And you came up and talked to me like you had known me your whole life, and you showed me that picture of you back in Brooklyn.
Which one?
When you looked a lot different, when you had long hair. And
was it a mugshot?
No, I don't remember what it was, but you, to put it bluntly, you were just a little bit heavier.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you had really long hair.
I didn't have numbers on
and you go, no. And you go, this is me. And I was like, look at, because you're a good looking dude. And I was like, no way. And you're like, yep. But I mean this seriously, is that you never stopped. Never stopped. No. When you left work, you'd go to the gym. And during the days, you were either writing or hustling, auditioning, you never stopped, never.
Because I came out here and it was the end of the road. There was no safety net. There was no place to go back to. There was nothing else I wanted or thought I could do. And I just said, I'm going to have to find a way. So that was it. I
and then
worked
you found
every day, went to the gym at night. Did auditions, workshops once a week, and that was the routine for a long time.
And found the love of your life.
And found the love of my life.
Yay! Well, and you used to work out at the 24-Hour Fitness in West Hollywood, right?
Still do.
Okay, well, that's pretty much, I use that in my act because it's a true story. Well, it's where.
That's not where you
Well, it's a Hollywood, it's 24-Hour, No, it's not 24
Hollywood
hour
boxing gym.
No. I thought you were talking about the 24-Hour Fitness on Santa Monica.
No. I'm at. Because
didn't you have some guy approach you sometime going, oh, he was asking you about working out, but you couldn't hear him, and then when you took your earphones off, he was like, hello.
He's one of my best friends today.
I told this. I use this in my act, and it's a true story. This is why I no longer go to the 24-Hour Fitness in Santa Monica. But I came out of the shower one day, and there were these two nice-looking young men, and they were on opposite sides in the sink area right outside the shower. And one guy was shaving his nuts, and the other guy was shaving his butt. And they're talking, and the guy goes, man, Tom Brady got screwed. And I'm just like toweling off, and I'm not even looking. I'm walking by, and it just slipped out. I go, man, if you guys were at the 24-Hour Fitness in West Hollywood, you'd both be getting screwed right now. And the guy goes, what? And I was like, I think that's the last time I'll go there. I've never gotten dressed so fast in my life.
Oh, my God, that's great.
But it's just so cool, like I said, to turn on the TV and see you in everything, and from comedy to drama. Do you have a favorite episode of anything that you've done so far?
I like the episode of Better Call Saul. I like the way that came out. I like the director, Adam Bernstein. Mm-hmm. It was fun working with him. Like I said, the group of people on LA's Finest is pretty cool. But all around, I've been fortunate. I have good experiences so far with everything. I can't really say I had any bad ones.
Do you guys have a favorite network television show that you're not involved in or have never, something that you like look forward to going home and sitting down and watching, anything in particular, whether it be comedy or drama? Or
my favorite network television show, aside from Magnum, in case my
of
boss
course
is listening,
yeah
is This Is Us.
This Is Us,
it's really beautiful.
Seen a couple times. Yeah it looks the couple times I always leave with a tear or a smile.
And, second to that on network, I'll watch Law & Order, The Mothership reruns.
Yep. I can't get enough.
There's 20 years I've probably seen every episode of the first 13 seasons, probably 3 or 4 times.
Well, it's just that's where I am, too. I'm binging it. It comes on like, Channel 58. And which it's just such a
Sundance and the
whatever they are, 92 on my my Spectrum cable. What is it? E.
We.
No. But what's 58? You guys have Spectrum?
I don't know from 58, but 92. I think.
Well, 58 is the one that has like these. And I'm sorry, I don't know if you like them or not, but I'm just going to say it, and it might hurt my career. But Chrisley Knows Best and all that garbage, these reality shows, please. But that sitting through the commercials just so I can watch Law & Order is like, oh, please hurry. But like last night, we started watching Mule. On Netflix or Amazon or whatever, and we needed to go back and watch the rest of it, and I'm laying there and I watch, like, if I click on Law and Order, forget it. I'm like, even if I've seen the episodes, but when something comes on, because now I'm the SVU I love, but the original ones with Sam Waterston, you know, when they do the first, they do the crime, then they go over to the courtroom part. You know, it's not
the
like
original.
The original. So I'm catching up on those right now, and I think I watched like three, and I'm like, and I'm the one that's going. I want to go finish watching The Mule. I want to go finish watching The Mule. And I gave him the remote, and I said, do not let. Because they go, you know, they end it, and then it goes into the right credits while they're starting the next one. And I go, do not let me watch 2 seconds of it, because it's going to suck me in. And that's what happened. And I'm like, give me that damn remote.
In 2 seconds.
In 2 seconds, you know.
I had to grab it out of his hand. No.
You know what? As you go back, because it feels like you didn't see them all the first time.
Uh-uh, no. Okay. This is like watching them the first time.
So just so you know, season 6, the finale. It's called Aftershock. And you should watch at least that season leading up to it so you get a sense of the nuance of the characters, because the finale is one of the best episodes of network television I've ever seen. And it was written by Michael Chernichin, who's a lovely man. And it's all character. It's an entire episode of Law & Order that really isn't about a crime.
Finale season 6.
Mm-hmm. It's great. Called Aftershock.
Aftershock. Mm-hmm. Write that down.
You can text me later and I can tell
okay.
you.
Okay. Yeah, because I'll Google it. I'll YouTube it.
But in the world of TV shows that there were things that, you know, obviously he was pretty busy, so he didn't have a lot of time to watch TV when he was first. But we then watched a lot of the things that had been my favorite together.
Mm-hmm.
The Wire. We loved, there's nothing better, frankly, I don't think, but NYPD Blue. And then we got hooked on Game of Thrones, which you wouldn't think is our thing, but excited for the return next
I haven't
next
touched
week.
On that yet.
Oh.
I haven't seen it.
Because it'll probably suck me in, too.
Mm-hmm. It will.
Well, what was it I wanted to... 10 minutes already? We're that far into the show? Mm-hmm. Damn it. Will you guys come on again sometime?
No.
Shut up, mother. Because you know, see what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm so because I want to play some Just Jump with you guys, but it goes by so fast on the Bob Dean Show. Yay! And there's just so much more to touch on. So I know you did. We'll plan it sometime in the future. Is that cool?
Cool.
All right. Is there anything you wanted to add before we play Just Jump?
I'd like to add how delightful you are. And how much we love you.
I love you guys,
and
too.
And how grateful we are to be here and just, to know
just,
you.
Just don't give them the address at anyone else.
This is what I wanted to say, before, not to be sappy, because, Bill, I kind of did the same thing as you at 44 years old. I did have a cushion, okay? And people are like, oh, you know, these pioneers. What? I crossed the deserts and the mountains in a covered wagon, but it was a Buick with air conditioning. Wagon, get it? But now, and you know, as people have heard me bitch and moan about this, the house and the flood, because it really affected me a lot. But that, my point being, is that I do not have a safety net now. And I thought when I came to Los Angeles that I would come out here, work on some training, networking, resume, and then go back to Nashville where so much is going on. But I don't have that safety net anymore. So now I'm stuck here. And it doesn't, you know, I'm still, you know, chugging along with the show and my stand up and that sort of thing. And Christina Scott, mm-hmm. who used to represent you, I love Christina. She sends me out a lot. I haven't booked anything in a long time. But I love it here. And I love it's what you were talking about. What I'm saying is that, is like, whenever I leave this, recording this show with these guys, or whenever I finish a class, or whenever I get off the stage at the HaHa or the Laugh Factory, I know this is where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially like after a really good class, when I'm on the freeway and friggin' Social Distortion comes on, Story of My Life or something, and I know that this is where, and I think to myself, I flipped a coin back in 1983, Miami or LA, and Miami won, and I'm thinking, if I had come out here, I could have already been a washed up has-been. On that note, let's play some Just Jump. Now, Mr. Olson, would you like to introduce Just Jump?
Just Jump!
You want to show him the cover? This is Amy Vanderbilt's 1957 Guide to Etiquette.
Nice.
And our first, and what our panel is going to see if we can answer the question collectively correctly. Question number one.
How should a man refer to his wife to associates or strangers?
The old lady.
Ball and chain.
The little woman.
Old lady ball and chain, the little woman. My wife. This is my wife.
Wife sentence. Yeah.
Ball and chain.
I got a wife sentence.
That's a whole other game that's going to evolve here. Yeah.
A man refers to his wife as my wife to acquaintances, Betty to close friends, and Mrs. Green to strangers. He never uses the phrase the wife.
Though, okay, so it's my. This is my wife. Remember that?
Yeah.
To acquaintances.
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Smart ass. Next question, please, Mr. Olson.
All right. Oops. Should a man remove his hat to kiss a lady?
Yes.
Yeah, certainly.
A man kissing a lady on the street in greeting or farewell only should always remove his hat, no matter what the weather. He should be careful concerning this courtesy even, or perhaps I should say especially, with his wife or daughter.
Thank you.
It's good to know.
These aren't real juicy questions today. No offense. Next, TikTok. Time's flying here.
Oh, well, this one fell out. Again. I got lost. When a group of ladies meet at a home, is it proper for the hostess to smoke a cigarette and not offer one to her guests? Or should she not smoke when no one else does?
Offer it to the guests.
Now, you have three smokers here, ladies. Four smokers here, and we make no apologies for it. Could you repeat the question? When a lady is entertaining.
When a group of ladies meet at a home.
Like bridge or whatever, or okay, a club meeting per se.
Is it proper for the hostess to smoke a cigarette and not offer one to her guests? Or should she not smoke when no one else does?
I have thoughts. Do you have any thoughts to start?
Well, I would say, of course she should offer. It's like a cracker. Why not? Right? Mm-hmm. But, yes, she probably should not smoke if no one else does. But I'd rather smoke than have those people sitting with me. Is that wrong?
I agree with you.
Okay.
Now, if I were entertaining a group of ladies or, you know, any group, if there were like three or four people in the room, I would all, you know, would you like to smoke? If it's like several, like if they're playing bridge at a couple of tables, well, it's the hostess though. No, she shouldn't. She should wait until somebody else fires up. Unless she offers everybody. But if you've got like 8 or 10 people in the room, you're not going to give them all your smokes, especially now that they're $12 a pack. Any thoughts, Bill?
I'd say she could smoke and offer it to her friends.
And the correct, according to Ms. Vanderbilt?
Back then. She should offer cigarettes to her guests. And if they refuse, then I hope she will at least limit her own smoking. It would be courteous of her to ask the others if they mind if she smokes, just as a man would. Of course, if someone does mind, she should not smoke.
But say you mind very much if they smoke. Remember that?
I think we should add the 2019 addendum, which is, if they mind, throw them the fuck out.
Exactly. That's my motto. At one of my Christmas Eve parties, you've been to one many years ago, because you guys like to celebrate your holidays in Vegas, which I understand. But like 3 years ago, in my little apartment, it was packed. There must have been 60 people crammed just inside, maybe 50. But anyway, I see this, and I'm tall, so I see the people being pushed, and this little girl comes up, and she goes, I cannot believe you're smoking inside. And of course, I was tanked. I probably had a gin falling out of a glass in this end, and I was like, first of all, it's my hat. And second of all, if you don't like it, you go outside. She was like, oh! All right, I believe that's unfortunately all the time we have for episode 69. 69,
really?
Baby. Oh, yeah. Wow. You guys are on episode 69.
Look at us.
69. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I forgot to write the phone number down. We have a phone number. Is anybody calling us at all?
No.
Nobody's calling us. But, you know, we do have a phone number. It's, I know it's 300 something.
323-300-323-4092.
Yeah. We don't even know because nobody's calling us.
It's going to suck if that's someone else's number. People start calling.
All right. Well, if you'd like to leave any questions, comments, or reviews for us here at the Bob Dean Show, yay. It's 323-300-something. But you can always please check me out, BobTheSorrellyComic.com. I realized, too, that I somehow, in a drunken stupor, I changed my Instagram because on my business cards it says Bob the Sorrelly Comic, but it's, in fact, BobDean2971 is my Instagram. So follow me on there. And Twitter, I don't even fuck with that stuff, so who cares? I mean, tweet me if you like. Let's see what else.
The phone number is 300-4092.
300-323-300-4092. So somebody please call just for shits and giggles. And it's one of those Google numbers, so it sounds a little awkward, like it's not cutting through, but you got to wait a minute. So somebody call, just tell me to fuck off or something.
What was that number again?
323-300-4092.
Thank you.
Defacing a library book.
No, it's my book.
Oh, okay. And so thank you, Barbara Kligman and Billy Malone. Love you both. Congratulations on the
new
house.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And please tell your friends to subscribe. Seriously, please ask everybody to subscribe to us on iTunes, The Bob Dean Show. Follow us on iHeartRadio. You can also listen on your Android device at the Stitcher app, STITCHER. And we are broadcasting now live on Facebook and YouTube. Please follow us on YouTube and just tell everybody. And if there's any big old producers out there, I sing, I dance, and I tell jokes.
And we'll do commercials.
Thank you, Sammy Junior. Thank you, Dennis Olson. Love you, Kathy St. George and Zach Herndon and everybody else out there in TV and podcast land. Have a nice day.
Bye.
Bye.